and action. Who's first to do one?
Oh, is it? I gotta say that?
Yes.
Public service announcement. If using opinions or other opinions.
That bullshit. They are my opinions. That's me, Shauna, and my guests. No one else's. Remember, this show ain't for chitlin's ears. So listening discretion and viewing discretion is advised. This is a paranormal horror crime show. So the scenes and the sounds can be a little terrifying to those little ears and those little eyeballs. And of course, there's obviously cussing. I mean, it's me. Also, please don't do anything that these stupid people do in this video or this podcast. Oh, and please, obviously, don't go out killing people. This is for entertainment purposes and for you guys to listen with your ears. Consume the knowledge. And now, time for the show. Perspective.
What is up, Parrot? Thank you so much for tuning in on this wonderful Wednesday, 6/15/2022, to listen to my interview with Charles D. Moisant. It was a wonderful interview. It was awesome of him to spend his time with me that day. We ended up talking for hours. Hours about comic books, superheroes, a lot of stuff. It was pretty awesome. I thank him so much for being on my show. Thank you so much, Charles, for being on my show. It was amazing. Thank you for the comic books that you gave me. They were awesome. Whenever I get this podcast up onto Audio Blim, I will make sure to put the link down in the description for his comic books, where he is. You know what? Just keep listening. Thank you guys for tuning in the last 2 weeks. So sorry I was gone. It was a time for me to try to get things situated and things together. I have got some awesome shows coming up for you guys. I can't wait to do them. We had the investigation on the 4th. It was amazing. I had my anniversary to my wonderful husband of might as well be 13 years. It was great. And then his birthday's on Friday. And I mean, guys, life is great. Just keep looking at the positives. I know negatives seem to be out there everywhere you go, but if you keep looking at the positives, it's just going to get brighter. I'm going to shut up now and stop babbling. It's now time for the show.
What's up, Perry Eves? It is your host, Shauna, with Exploring the Paranormal. No, I can't even speak. Your host of Exploring the Paranormal Perspective. Yay. Yes. Yay. And I have an awesome, awesome artist with me today. Met him back at Dead Convention and it was awesome meeting him. Charles D. Moisant. I can't say the French word.
Charles D. Moisant.
Croissant. But I met you with Philo and oh my gosh, the other guy's name is eluding me. The other, it was you, Philo, and the other guy with the fez.
Oh, Brian K. Moore.
Right. Yes. Oh, thank you. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I'm so sorry, Brian. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Well, Brian says, I'll take my rug, I'll take it out of your hide later. And Cookie will watch. Brian and Cookie are just an amazing pair and couple. I mean, what a lucky husband and wife team. One, to have the synergy with each other, and two, the love. But what was really fun with Brian K. Morris is, when we first met, we were kibitzing about old comic books and the old formula style. And I told him about doing a book called Mystery Manor, which was an anthology based off of an actual haunted house, which was also a haunted attraction. So it was a real haunted house in Omaha, Nebraska. This property used to be a bordello. It was a place for the Union Pacific it then became this ransacked low-income housing place. It got condemned.
Oh, wow.
And then Wayne Seeley decided to buy it with two other friends. And then they didn't make a lot of money on the haunted house, but Wayne knew what he was doing because he's done haunted houses for March of Dimes. So then he's like, all right, bye, guys. I'll buy you out. Give me 3 years to pay you off. He did. He's now the sole owner. And the haunted house is now, I think it's going to be celebrating their 35th year real soon.
Nice.
Yes.
Wow. But how
involved with that was back in my 20s, I thought, oh, cool, I'm going to go to Omaha, Nebraska, because I might win a radio DJ contest and be a radio DJ. Yeah, I'll be so cool being on the radio. And I didn't win. And I spent all my money, and I was living in a flop house because I ran out of money to stay at a YMCA, and I didn't want to go home and be like, oh, I didn't make it. I'm a loser. Yeah. So I thought, why don't I try to make a life here? And I met Wayne Seeley, who owned Mystery Manor, and he asked me to stay there. And I had some weird paranormal things happen in that place. The first thing that happened was I would call time dilation. The place is very cold. He wanted to have a basically like a security guard there, somebody on site, so that if there was a problem, I could run to the phone and call for the police and get police there for a break-in. And they had a coffin there. And he apologized and said it was the only warm place in the house. So I would go in the coffin, lay down, shut the lid, close my eyes, then to my knowledge, open my eyes, open the lid, and it was morning. And I felt completely well-rested. It was like this wave came over me and I was well-rested. So it was a very, very strange experience.
Wow.
That happened, and it happened on more than one occasion when I was there. We actually did have some fun because I think Good Morning America came in to interview and be like, hey, we're at a haunted house. So Wayne had me put on a fake rubber mask and fake rubber gloves and just lay there still. And as he's showing the place around, he's like, oh yeah, and then we got these like animatronics, things like that I could power on later for you. And when the guy put his hand under the coffin to rest it, I grabbed his hand and territory is great. And I was so scared he hit the wall, some plaster fell off, and Wayne just said, well, you just made my house better. So I played a mad scientist there. And this was back in '86. It was the third year the house was open. And then anyway, I decided to move on with my life, tried to get into voiceover. I could do polyphony, computer voice, and other things. Sound effects.
Cool.
So I could rival the police academy guy.
God, I can never remember his name either.
I mean, the guy is cool. But, just forgot about Mystery Matter. It was a chapter in my life, things like that. Flash forward to Katrina. So I'm with my buddy, Sean Sullivan, who owns a Smooth Mortgage Company. It's an amazing concept, but that's a different story. We're driving through Omaha because Katrina came and we're like, okay, we're not going to go through the South to get home. We're going to take that. And I see a sign for Boba the Clown Mystery Manor. And I'm like, oh my God, they're going to be celebrating it's going to be their 20th year. It's 05. And I decide to go there. I walk in, Wayne Seeley's at his desk. He looks up. And the first thing he says is, Charles, is that you? Oh, my God, it is you. We still have your lab coat. And he kept my purple lab coat from 20 years earlier.
Wow. That's the stuff
that I had on him back then. So we started talking, and I was going through a divorce then. So it was a great distraction to get away from the boohoo stuff. And I started acting again there. And I had my second paranormal experience in that house where I'm in the office and Wayne tells me that I am slightly levitating. I'm serious. To my end, I feel I'm leaning back and my head is on some lady's knees and she's stroking my hair, just smiling, you know, very, you know, almost happy. And then when Wayne opened the door, I'm like, what's going on? And she disappeared. The dream state disappeared. And boom, I feel myself at the couch and wake up. And he said, the house has accepted you back again, Charles. Welcome back. So he decided, yeah, isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
So he decided, after talking, let's make a comic book. So we came out with Wayne Seeley's Mystery Manor. And we loosely based the stories off of the skits throughout the house, you know, back in 05, 06, 07. So it had a limited run. So flash forward back to Brian K. Morris. I was telling him about Bachelor's Row, the real place, which is a haunted cemetery. It has a haunted ghost house that can appear and disappear. There's some legends about that and a haunted pond. And so we thought, oh my God, why don't we create a world setting where your typical anthology comic books happen, just like in EC Comics or something like that, except the pond, the house, and the cemetery are always co-stars and subtle narrators. So they don't narrate directly, but it's the setting for all this mayhem. So then we started to create legends behind each of it. So the house is lawful evil. It'll come up with games for you to play with. It can polymorph and change. So one day it might be a saloon, another day a mental hospital, you know, so on and so forth, or a house. And so different stories would stem from that. The cemetery is neutral evil, and she's tired of being pregnant, wants, and the more bodies you put into the ground, the more pregnant the ground is to a cemetery. And the cemetery just wants to be left alone, just go away, leave me alone. But if you mess with it too much, then it will cause you a little mayhem. Then you got the pond that is chaotic evil, and it is visceral. It wants more death. It is hungry. And it is so happy that the mob uses it as a dumping ground. So that's kind of how the trilogy worked together. And then we would stem stories where I might springboard a story off of Brian. Then, like the lunatic that he is, he pipes out like crazy. So he came up with a set amount of stories, and I've been slowly putting them into print.
These are awesome. I mean, talk about nostalgia. I got, whenever you gave me these two books, because you gave me Bachelor's Grove.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you gave me Whisper from the Void.
Yes.
And when you gave me them and I started looking through them, my inner child was like, oh my God, comic books again. Because they are wonderfully drawn out and articulate. And my inner child was just like, I got to read these. So I sat down and I read them and I love them. You experienced ghosts in real life and started doing stuff to bring them out for everybody to see.
Yes. Yes.
So you have Bachelor's Grove, you have Mystery Manor. You also have two more, right?
Yeah.
Blood
Feast, which is loosely based off of the Class restaurant. Unfortunately, I think that restaurant is in limbo right now. It's for sale. And if I could buy it, I would have Chef Ramsey come in there because the architecture is old Slavic, Czechoslovakian from like the 20s and 30s. So it's really rich in architecture and hand sculpted lamps and supposedly bordello on the upper floor. Mayhem, you know, their own bit of weird crime and you know, their own bit of spooky spooks going on in there and creeps in the night.
Oh, wow.
A buddy of mine, Colin Reed, turned it into a haunted house for a season. And so,
wow. I thought,
how cool would it be to make a apparently, huh, Mystery Manor turned into a comic book. A blood feast based off the class, a haunted house, turned that into a comic book. So for a while, I was trying to turn haunted houses into comic books, was fun. But the class is a one-shot. So that one is fun. I've done a Bane of the Werewolf with my buddy Robert E. Brown. And he's recently recovering from a stroke, getting stronger. God bless him.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so that's fun. And I'm delving into fantasy, the Cockerel's Fist, and that's a whole world there. Oh, no, it's funny. You know what a cockerel is, right?
Not really.
It's a male chicken.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense now.
Right. So the cockerel's fist, it's a chicken with a fist, which is ridiculous, you know. And so the logo.
Leghorn, leghorn.
Right. But instead of the wings being a fist, it still has its normal wings. One of its legs curls up into a big bicep and a fist. Right. So the backstory with that is these two idiots. I mean, they're complete morons, but they are so amazing with cooking. That everybody wants it, and they don't care about money, so they like tell us the best story, and then we'll give you free food. And the main character Ilka helped with this, with building it, and then she said, "Prove your story." So there's this like actual dragon style hoard of treasure and trinkets and items all smattered throughout the restaurant. But each of them are from a true story. So it's a very wealthy place. But, but you come on in, tell us the story, here's some food. And that was the springboard for a D&D style type comic book.
Oh, you know what, though? That would be kind of an interesting concept for a restaurant, though. Go inside, have like this little mystery comic book play thing go on while you're eating your dinner. And yeah, that'd be cool.
It would be. Yeah. But if you want, I could send you a PDF of some of the early some of the pages from the Cockerel's Fist to have fun with that.
That would be awesome.
Sneak peek. Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, and now I'm going to turn to a webcomic and collect it at the end of the year to turn that into a major one. And that's written by the illustrious Peter Jones / Frog Jones, who lives in Washington, the state, Seattle, Washington, and very brilliant. He also brought aboard a artist who prefers they, but the work that they have done also for some pinup art is quite amazing. And then Alex Riss from Brazil is doing the main art. While the first book is an anthology, for the web series, we decided to turn it into a continuing series and have the characters evolve and whatnot. To go back to Whispers from the Void, which you mentioned, that was a concept of what if all monsters were reflections of the seven deadly sins?
Yes. That is very interesting in and of itself.
Right. So I decided to work with Cheryl Bodine. And Cheryl Bodine is a romance writer. And she came up with the idea of pulling together three other romance writers. So there's four romance writers working together. And one of the writers, we have Rosemary Paulus, Lori Domino. Okay, can you read the credits?
Sure.
Yeah.
Let me see.
Yeah, it's been a while since I worked on that.
Created by Charles E. Mouffant. Illustrations by Robert Moran. Cover art by Vincent Prose. Developed and written by Cheryl Bodine, Lori DiMarino, Rosemary Paulus, and Patricia Rosemore.
That's it. That's Patricia Rosemore. She is also known for paranormal romance as well. So this was right up her alley. So each of them took a personality of a character. So Cheryl Bodine was Blythe, the ghost. Rosemary Paulus was the mad scientist. Laurie was the flesh construct, and Callie the vampire was written by the third. I should not be buzzing on her name.
Damn, Patricia me. Rosemore, Laurie what? Dean Marino, and Cheryl Bodine.
Yeah, I really put those names.
Patricia Rosemore.
Yeah, well, Patricia Rosemore.
You said her first, didn't you?
Yeah, but she worked on, well, there are four of them.
Right. Cheryl Bodine, Laurie DeMarino, Rosemary right. Paulus, and Patricia Rosemore.
Yeah, Rosemary Paulus. Yeah. But one of them, that's how long I worked on it. One of them works at Columbia College, but she has over 10 million romance books sold.
Wow. So, yeah,
it was just quite an amazing thing.
Right.
And Cheryl Dean is involved with high society, like the service club where they raise money and they just do philanthropic things. Her late husband was the owner of Bodine Electronics, a billion-dollar company. So it's like, here I am, you know. Here you got these like giants just like, yeah, we'll and write a comic book with you, Charles.
That was easy.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. So basically, the idea of the monsters being reflections of the seven deadly sins, mad scientist decided to do an experiment that monsters are aberrant by the natures of what they are, because they are reflections of the seven deadly sins. For example, mad scientists and witches represent pride. And that is why a mad scientist and a witch can truly never work together, because who is in charge? But a mad scientist can work with another mad scientist, so on and so forth. And a witch can also work with other witches. So the mad scientist had a hypothesis. What if I develop a team of monsters with their aberrant means to do actions with non-aberrant results? Would then we be heroes? And would I be bringing on a dawn? Would I be in charge of a dawn of a new age? And so that's her hypothesis to you know, hear this mad scientist, Idonia, and there's a backstory with her too, you know, involved with World War II.
You know,
left Germany and basically told Hitler that if I leave, the war will be lost and you will lose.
Kind of sounds familiar.
Yeah. You know, but what Hitler decided to do was send spies afterwards and anyone who assisted her along the way to exterminate them, to execute them, to kill them subtly, poison, so that there was always a trail of death left behind wherever Idonia went until she made it to the States. And she created a flesh construct program where she would resurrect the dead, but you need seven. And with building a flesh construct with seven, you confuse the angel of death, and the death would not recognize it as a living being and leave it alone. And thus, you could create seven constructs by intermixing the seven parts of seven individuals. And she decided to make a female individual, Ruth, RX-237, who was different than the rest because the heart of her stillborn child is actually in Ruth. So unlike the other flesh constructs, there is the beating of an innocent heart, and different than all the others. And she literally considered Ruth her daughter. In the story. So, yeah.
Listen at your brain. Those ideas are great.
Yeah, and we got issue two. There is a different form of Disney artist. She may be working on it out of Michigan. So, you know, right now she's going through some serious situations. And once that's solved, she may be picking it up and move forward. If not, then I may get a different one. So fun stuff.
You've got a lot of things going in the works.
Yes. I'm one of those wacky, hyperactive guys.
So what about this thing that you were telling me about, this awesome game?
Oh, Outer Planet Panic. We work together to stab each other in the back.
I've actually played this game. Well, I got to play a little bit of it while we were in DeadCon. And
yes,
very interesting concept.
Well,
I was going to say, because it's a board game, but you can play by yourself.
Yes. Sometimes you got people have a lot of friends and they can get together, and then you got, you know, people who maybe don't have a lot of friends, or they're by themselves or things like that. And I thought, and I worked with three other people too. Jerry Jackson, former Navy, Tom Green, not the actor, and Scott Richardson, who I mentioned a little earlier in our private talk, who runs a convention in Oklahoma, of all places.
Of all places?
Yes, God bless us. They came up with the main concept for the game for four or more players. And then they pulled me in on it for the artwork. But then after getting more involved, I started tweaking the mechanics and figured out how to make the game for 1 to 6 players. So, and I've been playtesting the mechanics, and it has been fine. I also changed the name. It was before Off-World Digs, which, okay, it's cute, to Outer Planet Panic. Let me get the box.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Kimberly Juarez with Cat Paranormal of Minnesota.
Hi, I'm Willow Lehman Shunt, psychic medium, Dark Nola Paranormal, New Orleans.
And I'm Jerry Ayers with Supernatural Investigators of Minnesota. And together, we are The Calling. Every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on ParaXRadioNetwork.com.
Source for everything paranormal. Para X.
Just in time for Halloween, explore the second edition of the Witch's Oracle deck through 45 innovative cards and enhanced guidebook that peers into the world of the witch. The deck's stunning artwork has a new look and includes 7 brand new inspirational cards. Each card now includes a suggested crystal or gemstone to enhance your reading, as well as a magical incantation that provides energy, reinforces the card's meaning, and helps the desired message to be sent out into the universe. The easy-to-navigate guide also has a new look and offers straightforward, gentle guidance that takes readers through both good times and bad. And now includes a chapter on crystal and gemstone divination by the amazing Nicholas Pearson. The Witch's Oracle. It is a perfect divination deck for witches as well as non-pagans, and is designed to suit both seasoned readers and beginners alike. Find out more about the Witch's Oracle deck at www.marlabrooks.com, and you can purchase the deck from schifferbooks.com, amazon.com, or order a copy from your favorite bookseller.
What's really fun with this game, and when I was at the Money Show and playtesting it, the Money Show is a thing in Vegas where they talk about different financial products, and then I'll sidestep into that. But there you got Outer Planet Panic, where everyone works together to stab each other in the back.
Wow. Did you do the artwork and all that on the box?
The artwork was designed by a native. Oh, wow. Look at this. I do government artwork, too.
Cool.
Is that crazy? But it was done by a Native American who's directly blood related, from what I understand, to Oshkosh, to Chief Oshkosh. Jay Hurd is his name, and he's gotten awards for his designs for Nike, for Adidas, I believe, and some other major firms. And now he's working with the American Indian Health Services of Chicago. And I was fortunate enough to get him to help me design the box art.
Wow.
Yeah, how wacky is that?
That is actually pretty darn cool.
Right. So, the way the game works is you get a sponsor. Oh, where'd my sponsor card go? You get a sponsor, and the sponsor gives you money. Like, I'm a sponsor, you know. And then you send your astronauts out to deep space to collect stuff to, you know, try to build a ultimate device. So that's like some like space money.
Cool.
You know, but you might be trying to build a time machine. You know, you're building an ultimate device to take over the galaxy. And I might be developing a quantum cohesion drive. Wow. So I could be at 1,000 places at once. And somebody else, you know, might be developing a Grissom detector, you know, so that they could spy on everything and the ultimate blackmail tool. So it's a treasure hunt as well. You know, so you're trying to hunt these seven items that you need. We even have a singularity bomb. It could take out a 50 light year radius. It's so powerful. Yeah. Now, but
some scary stuff that we really don't want in real life.
No. But I thought, you know, why don't we go with an art style that's familiar, almost like a Jack Kirby-esque, and make it over the top. But, you know, and then change the name from Off-Road Digs to Outer Planet Panic. So, you know, everyone is in a panic to build these devices first, the ultimate arms race. There's no combat. It's all negotiation. So, it's, you know, like, remind me of what was your experience when you got to play it.
Oh, wow. It was very strategic. You really got to watch your back, so to speak. Because, yeah, you think you trust someone and they can just turn around and take it all from you and you just don't have anything and have to start all over. And it's crazy how quick it can happen, too, in the game, because just 1 minute you are almost, you got one piece left and you just need to put something together and then... What just happened? It's a fun game because you never know who's gonna stab you in the back, so to speak.
Oh yeah, and you have to stab it.
Yes.
At one point, you know, it's like, you know, you and I might be playing, and we're both to like the final part, and then I might send a spy to you and steal one of your pieces, which I've needed all along, and then I win the game.
A lot of it reminded me back in the day whenever I was playing D&D, and you don't really have a game master, but you're all working together to do stuff, and you're in this little group. It seems like a really fun, interactive, get your friends together kind of game. It really does. And for it to be like a science fiction kind of atmosphere. I mean, because where's Elon Musk going? I mean, he's getting ready to take everything to Mars.
Right. He may be the pioneer for the background concept for Outer Planet Panic. You know, have you heard of the name William Murray?
I have heard of that name.
Squirrel Girl?
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate enough to have him write. I gave him the templates, but he wrote backstories for all the races.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That is really cool.
Right. So now it has played with text. So, and the, my reason for that is even though the characters, like Monopoly, you have the different objects. And it doesn't matter who's the object. But people, you know, have a, like, I want to be the iron.
Right.
Hey, I want to be the race car. You know, and you develop a personal investment to it, you know, because of an object or item that you like.
That represents you.
Right. Yeah. And so with these alien races, you know, we put a delicious backstory behind them to, you know, give more flavor so that you really like them. The sponsors have positives and negatives to them. So what you need to do to counteract the negatives is either get very powerful devices that you could dig for, or you hire employees to counteract the negatives as well. And that could really change the game. There was one point, this person was about to take a great advantage, and then an event happened from the event horizon, and there was a death in the family, and their worker had to leave. And all of a sudden, the bonus is gone, and that literally shifted the game.
Wow.
Yeah. And then with the one player concept, you're playing it like you normally would, except every third turn, you roll the dice for a number of planets, and then you roll the dice a second time on how many items are taken from those planets and sold to the Academy. So it's a mock way of having, quote, ghost players try to build their device, and then the leftovers are sold to the Academy, which you can also buy. But the main crux, if you and I are playing, we play until one of us wins, or we decide, we're too tired, we quit.
Right.
With the single player game, you either have 20 cycles to win the game, or if you want to make it difficult, 12 cycles.
Oof.
Right. And if you don't win, you're arrested. And then you've got to roll an outcome to see if you executed, if you escaped.
Oh my God.
Right. And there are epilogues too. So.
Oh, wow. Interesting. That sounds like a really fun game. Now, is it going to stay just in like a board, or are you going to try to make it bigger into like an online game, or?
I hope to evolve it to an online game, and I'd like to possibly incorporate an NFT model involving with it. So, okay, you put some money into it, you get some NFTs, and then NFTs could be a commodity that people trade back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we'll see. You know,
that sounds interesting. It'd be cool to see something like that pop up on my Steam one day.
Yes.
And play it. Oh, man. I was noticing that you were into games like that, especially whenever I was stalking your page the other day.
Yay, I got a creepy stalker.
I was looking at the YouTube channel, and I'm trying to find it now because I've got roller derby in my head because I had just
watched
the roller derby stuff that you were promoting back in 13.
Yes.
But my gosh, where did it go? It was right at the top of your list on here, and now it's not.
It's it's weird, Facebook. Yeah, I got to try to reconnect with the ladies because of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
I hope their team is still together. But the Chicago outfit is a roller derby team that I sponsored. So what I would do is I'd do printing for them and be like, oh, okay, just give me cost. You know, they love.
Cool.
I made a comic book out of a loosely based off of them too, you know, a concept comic book. So roller derby drama came to it, where all derby girls had superpowers. And I've gone through some redesigns, so I could send that to you if you want to show them off.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think one of them that was going to be my favorite was Grave Girl, because the concept of her pushing pushing somebody into the ground. Yeah. That was interesting.
Yeah, her concept is she when she fights, she usually fights to kill you. And then she is able to shove you in the ground. You temporarily resurrect as an undead, able to control her. And then you spontaneously fully resurrect back to what you were.
I was really interested in that concept because I have a friend that's in roller derby in Louisiana, in New Orleans. Yeah. Or Mobile. Okay. And she was all about roller derby for, I have to get in touch with her because I think the last time I saw her was about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And right before all this mess happened, and she was really kicking butt in it.
Oh,
so,
love it.
But as I'm sitting there looking at that going, I don't like to hurt. I hurt all day long anyway because of my joints.
Yeah.
I don't want to do anything like that. More power to you, girl.
Right.
The girls that are doing roller derby, more power to you, because
they're like
they're brutal.
Iron goddesses and football teams should bow to them.
Definitely. The football team, the boxers, MMC fighting, all.
Right. I mean, imagine having rugby with skates where you get a boot to the head.
Yes.
I mean,
that's what... Oh my gosh. Yeah, these women are brutal. They'll get.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I don't.
How can you not love it?
I know, right? They're like, kick her ass.
I had to tone it down. I mean, you're not allowed to hit now. You basically just bump with your hits, or it's more like bumper cars instead of the that one has long hair to pull, trim.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like hockey anymore. They want to sit there and call, calls whenever they throw them into the wall anymore. It's like, hey, that was part of hockey.
Right.
You get thrown into the walls.
Yes, you're supposed to have a fight in hockey. What's wrong with you people?
Exactly. It's like roller derby's the same way. You're supposed to have a fight in roller derby. That's what roller derby's about.
Yeah. Where's the visceral team enmity?
But yeah, I can't.
So that's why. Oh, go on.
No. You go ahead.
That's why with the derby concept art, I would go over the top. Okay. For example, what's the name of your derby friend? What's her derby name?
Oh God, no, I don't know. I gotta look at it. Her real name is Tammy.
We don't care about the real name.
That's what she'll tell me too. Why did you tell him that? That's not my name. Yeah. I'll have to look it up though.
Okay.
And see.
Yes. Are there other derby friends with derby names that you know? As she looks for it, we will go to a quick commercial break.
Yes.
This interviewer is one of the most amazing paranormal interviewers ever. For example, when I was, while you're looking to, now I got two creepy stories from Bachelor's Grove.
Ooh.
That happened to me personally when we were looking around. A friend would do infrared photography, and he would find, weird little things. And this was before Ursula Urbanski and some others, I have the name in my comic book at the end, worked to restore Bachelor's Grove. Now it's like manicured, it looks pretty, stuff like that. But before it was overgrown and creepy looking, hard to find. Actually, there were three things that happened. The first one was, we're ghost hunting, in the cemetery. And this was back in the 80s. So it was very sophomore, the equipment that we would have, in late high school or early college. And I'm walking around with my friend who's wanting to take some infrared photography. And I slip in this one spot, hit the ground. And all of a sudden, I see the ground raising next to me, going up, and I'm sinking down. It's like, what the hell? And my friend runs over and he's like, pulls me up. And he's like, I realize I'm in a sunken grave.
Oh my God.
Right. So of course I'm filled with the heebie-jeebies and my friend drops his camera, breaks it. It pops open. So all the infrared is destroyed. So it was like, okay, the spirits who don't want to be photographed. then my back starts itching, and he looks at me, and there's like thousands of grave mosquitoes covering my back. So we run out of there. We hightail it out of there. We were like, okay, we've lost our fear check. And when I take my shirt off, I'm so infected with the visceral from these ick mosquitoes. It looks like I have horrible acne and pustules and swollen.
Oh, gosh.
About a week. Oh, yeah. And I didn't go to the hospital. I hid it from my mom and parents. And about, 2 weeks later, I finally healed, but it was really creepy. So that was the first experience.
Oh, man. That would have been awesome.
right.
Not the mosquitoes, of course. But
sinking in the grave, like, the second experience, when this we actually involved the police, we're looking for the trail to the house and to see if we could see the house appear or disappear. And the rumor is, if you see the house and the house does not want you to come to it, as you try to approach it, the house just keeps moving away. But if it wants you, you enter it, it might fold out of reality, and you're folded out of reality with it. So you might become a missing person.
Whoa.
Yeah. And sometimes there are spirit lights or light of the house that also might appear and just move around too. But as we were, looking, we find this little trail of, it looked like human femur bones that were sawed in half. All aimed the same way, kind of like go this way on this trail. And we started to walk, and then we realized, wait a second, these look like human femur bones. And we're like, maybe we should call the police on that one. We did. They looked at it, forensic looked at it, and they were all female femur bones.
Oh, whoa.
And it was dated from the 1800s.
Wow, what a find.
Yeah. So that was a heebie-jeebie moment.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah.
My gosh. It makes me want to be in forensics now and just research those bones to see if what else happened. Freaking sawed off bones? What the?
Right. Don't know. So that they were all, aimed the same way. I forgot the name of it. God, this is terrible. Here I do medical illustrations. So you got the round part of the bone and then the straight part.
Yeah.
But they're all pointed,
Right.
Boom, 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 boom. Like it was a trail, like go like this way.
A bunch of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Well, they stopped doing the witch hunts in the 1800s.
Really? That I didn't know.
I'm going to have to research that again. I want to say it was Salem. I need to look it up somewhere because I was looking it up for, because we were going to do a show at one time. And there was a bunch of research done on the Salem witch trials and everything and what happened. And we had found some evidence where some of the last, the actual last witch hunts were done in the late 1800s. And one of them was in the 1900s. And now I'm going to have to look it up because it just stuck to me. I was like, oh my God, they still did that?
So with the one in the 1900s, what would they be arrested? Would they be?
She didn't die. Right. She was just accused of being a witch, and they brought her to trial. Oh, I just saw her name. On here, and I lost it. Oh my gosh, Roxy Codone or Codone, C O D O N E.
What a cool name.
Yeah.
It was almost like, I don't see anybody by that name control me.
Oh, and she was also an EMT for a long time.
Really?
Dang.
They were probably just jealous because she was damn good at her job and getting ahead. you know.
Well, I used to play tabletop Vampire the Masquerade with her.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we would go over to her house and she was the GM and we would sit there and play tabletop the Masquerade. And it was so much fun. And then she moved.
Oh, no.
And then I moved. So it was fun.
If I may ask, without getting personal, whereabouts were you living at the time?
I was in Dothan, Alabama. I was in my home state.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're from Alabama. I got a buddy in Alabama. I got a weird Alabama story. Oh, I should. I'm going to be very censored how I go about it. But continue on.
Oh, but we just played the Vampire and the Masquerade, and then whenever it was me that left. I left first.
Yeah.
And moved to Florida, and then she moved to Mobile, and we just stopped. But it was fun. My son, my oldest son, who is 20 now, was 2.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a long time ago, but it was fun. I loved it.
What did you play when you were doing the Vampire the Masquerade?
I'm going to let you guess.
I don't know it that well. Damn it. So
I'll give you a hint. They like shiny things and they got distracted by shiny things all the time.
Oh my God. I don't know the game well enough to really be useful. Because I had a group that kept playing the werewolf.
Yes. I can't even think of
It's our sometimers happening.
I know the sometimers tabletop. Let me look up the tabletop.
Yeah, I'm now nerding out too.
I still have some of the paperwork I found the other day just cleaning up from that. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so old.
Yeah.
World of Darkness. There we go.
Right.
Vampire the Masquerade. You have the hunter, the wolf. Let's see.
Bloodlines. Bloodlines.
Bloodlines, yes.
Yeah. They canceled the video game that was supposed to be out in 2021.
I know. I was so disappointed in that because I saw previews to it and I was so excited and so hyped up.
I mean, that, you know.
How are you going to do that? How are you going to cancel that? That was so rude. Rude. Rude.
Right. Well, a bunch of jerks.
Right.
Okay. Here's a weird side question. During the pandemic, did you play video games like crazy or did you end up so busy you didn't have time?
I actually ended up so busy I didn't have time because I was podcasting.
Okay, right. You know, and for me, I did a COVID comic book. Going around the country, like helping people set up networks and stuff like that, I ended up so busy I couldn't play video games.
Right.
You know, and here all these poor souls, we're like suffering, dying, getting ready to lose their houses, get evicted, and then they put the moratorium on. Couldn't afford this, couldn't afford that, had to go on, public aid to make ends meet, which I respect and understand, and then others, got blessed, in different ways.
And that, my friends, was part one of my interview with Charles D. Sant. Thank you guys for tuning in. Tune in next week for part two and maybe a little history on those witches. Thank you guys for listening. Have a great Wednesday and have a great upcoming weekend. Bye, y'all. Oak tree, you shiver free from your spine. Till I'm here, you're sweating from your fear. 12, one step. Yeah.
are listening to Para X.